A question we need to ask ourselves. Am I okay?
We're approaching the end of a second year living through a pandemic, and everyone just seems a little bit frazzled. And I'm not just talking about our patients. Health professionals have been working on the front line this whole time, and it's important to look after our own mental health too. So today we've brought in a psychiatrist to speak with us about improving our patients' mental health, but also to focus on preserving our own mental health as doctors. We have today with us Dr. Craig Wilson. Thank you so much for coming in and joining us today.
You're most welcome. I appreciate the opportunity.
Craig, I found myself getting a little bit stressed and losing a bit of empathy with my patients, a bit more irritable and cranky. And I just needed to take off a few days. And I sat at home and walked my dog and played with my Star Wars Lego. And that was my mindfulness practice. But sometimes we don't really acknowledge that we're getting to that point. Like, what are some of the telltale signs that we're reaching breaking point or reaching burnout? And what are some other strategies apart from Lego that we can use to really get through that point of time?
So getting towards breaking point is something that I think doctors face at many points in their career, but at this point more than ever with all of the COVID challenges. So I guess to take a hard look at oneself in terms of your general health, your self-care, are you doing the things that you were doing in 2019 or are you not? Are you seeing friends? Are you not? I think all of us have been a bit run down through the last couple of years. And I think doctors have let go of the vast majority of those things through the pandemic, kind of holding our breath. Now it's time to exhale and pick up all the tools that we have had before. And if not, it's time to find those tools.
Why do you think it's been so hard for doctors over this period of time? Like, it feels like the last 2 years have been the longest 100 years of my life. Why is it so difficult?
So difficult on many levels. Doctors themselves had lots of fears about COVID and giving COVID to their families. All of our boundaries have broken down between work and home, and we've lost connection to so many of our coping mechanisms. We can't see friends, we can't dine, we can't travel. Most forms of exercise became impossible. And the pressures of life outside of work also became enormous as well.
And do you think that doctors should have their own GP as well?
Absolutely. No question that that is wonderful for one's physical and mental health. And I unfortunately don't have data, but I would be confident in saying it would lead to better patient outcomes. So if doctors need motivation to get their own GP, I think one reason for that is it'll actually make you a better doctor.
So Craig, what can GPs do when we're looking out for our colleagues? So if we're thinking that somebody might have anxiety or depression, what are the telltale signs and what's the best way of approaching that?
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful question because that's all the stuff that is very prevalent at the moment. And of course, it's the stuff that predisposes to more serious things. Look, I think that the best way to look out for problems in our colleagues is to ideally have a good relationship with those colleagues so that you've got a baseline. You know what they're like and you know what they're like when they're well, and therefore you can tell when they're deviating from that wellness. So one, to have a bit of a radar for are your colleagues functioning in the way and interacting in the way that they normally do so that you can detect the likelihood of a difference. And then the other is how to broach those questions with them. And if you think there's a real concern, now, one needs to be quite gentle in asking GPs about these sorts of things because you don't want to sort of force a colleague into that patient role. So I think it's really quite important to have a very gentle check-in with people. Like, have you gone through this whole pandemic thing? Have you been traveling okay? I've just been ridiculously stressed. What have you been like?
So I suppose one of the things we don't often talk about is suicide. What are the current trends that are happening in Australia? And what should we be worried about at this stage of the COVID-19 pandemic?
So it is interesting. Some of the early data, which is the only data that we have available, is from early on. So from sort of early to mid-2020, we don't have a lot of data that goes through to end of 2021. And that initial data doesn't actually suggest that the rate of suicide has increased. Anecdotally, however, I think that it will be borne out in the data that the rate of suicide has increased because the intensity of all of the conditions that predispose to suicide it's been a mushroom cloud. There's so much more depression. There's so much more substance abuse. There's so much more isolation. There's such profound limitation on all of the things that help and prevent suicide. So at the moment, the data isn't there, but I suspect that both contemplation of suicide and completed suicide will prove to have been much worse through the pandemic.
For practitioners, what should we be looking for risk factors for suicide in our patients?
Patients will look less well. They will just be less vibrant and they'll be less connected. They'll be less connected to you in the interviews, perhaps being more emotionally shut down. And perhaps one thing that isn't considered is that it's not just the patients who come to you that you should have a radar for. I think it's worth considering a bit of a surveillance of the patients that attend our practices, because it's the ones that haven't reconnected, that haven't come back in to see people, that I think may be at extreme risk. So in my own practice, I've literally gone through all of my patient database and reached out to all of the people who haven't reconnected, because I think those people are in a lot of risk. It's the standard things about asking about how one is going and exploring symptoms of depression. And if you get any red flags, then exploring whether they've had any dangerous thoughts or any thoughts like that. It might even be worth having it as part of one sort of general checkup. My own GP does that. You know, he asks about my exercise and he asks about my mental health. How am I feeling? How am I coping? And if it's part of a general screen of one's overall health, it's not too confronting in that way.
Losing a patient to suicide could be considered an occupational hazard for GPs. Many of us will experience this. Now, how may losing a patient impact on us as clinicians, and how do we support our patients or colleagues after the suicide of a loved one?
It's a devastating event when it happens, and I think that GPs actually cope with this sort of thing quite a lot, and there are some very simple things that one can do. You need to talk about it with your colleagues, and you need to talk about it with professionals. If it's something that you feel is actually impairing your function, then it's definitely something that is able to be assisted greatly by speaking with a psychologist or a psychiatrist. It is par for the course with what we do. You know, patients do die. The other thing is that GPs often think that they're responsible. Very common that everybody around the person who dies by suicide, who has contact with them in the period leading up to that death, feels responsible and feels that they should have done more, or they could have prevented it, or even that it's actually their fault. So to be aware that while there might be opportunities to try and intervene, no one gets to the point of suicide 5 days before it happens. It's always a vastly longer process.
So I suppose we do like to dissect things. We like to know what the whys and the hows of what has happened to our patients. What is your advice for GPs going through that?
One definitely needs to think about whether the processes and practices were suitable and appropriate for the patient. It's definitely worth reflecting on whether something's been missed. Like, has this person had severe depression and I just haven't noticed? And that's all well and good, as long as you try and do it in a professional way and not get too lost in your own emotional response to it. I think it's worth even just having a journal where you would write some reflections about this patient event, and then perhaps talk about it with colleagues or peers. In psychiatry, we have a formal peer review group that we all need to be part of. I don't believe there's such a thing in general practice, but I do know that some doctors do it anyway. And to have a group that you can actually talk through the event that has happened with the patient is enormously helpful.
So when there's been a suicide in a family, then we do get worried about those family members or their friends suffering from mental health problems or even considering suicide themselves. How do we tackle that as doctors?
So I think it's actually a very valuable role that doctors have, and it's also one that we get very little training in. It's something that medical education could do better. I think that the process that I would say works best when patients have someone who they've lost close to them, to talk about what a normal reaction is and to talk about some of the possibilities within the realm of that normal reaction, including contemplating the idea that it would be better if you yourself were dead and with that person, not necessarily in that language, but saying, look, sometimes when people lose someone close to them, it makes them think about death themselves. I just want to check in with you that that's not something that you've been thinking about. Losing someone is very tragic and very sad, but that sadness should not extend to you thinking about ending your life as well. And if those are thoughts that you're having, then, you know, we can talk through that and we can help that.
Dr. Craig Wilson, thank you so much for talking through all of this with us today about our own mental health and making sure that we're preserving our own mental health. Can you just summarise the main key points that you're wanting GPs to take home from today?
I'd say that we're at a point in time where it's a great time to take stock, take a personal inventory, think about how you're genuinely feeling, think about your own physical and mental health, even your emotional health. Think about what the things are in your world that help you to cope with life. And are you doing all of those things that you were doing a couple of years ago? Are there other coping strategies like new forms of exercise, new hobbies, new social connections that you could create? And in that inventory of how one's going at the moment, I think it's very important to think about how your relationships with your colleagues, how your relationships with friends, and how your relationships with family. And by thinking about all of those dimensions, I think you can really get a good sense of how you're traveling and the obvious areas for improvement.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on Drive Time Medical.
Thank you for having me.
Please note the PBS information for Valdoxan, Agomelatin. This product is not listed on the PBS. Note, liver function tests need to be completed at baseline, 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 3 months, and 6 months. Please review the product information before prescribing. The product information and substantiating references can be obtained from the Drive Time Radio website. This interview was proudly organised by Servier, produced March 2022.